Our next speaker is Stan Fletcher, and he's going to talk about cropping system, where's the economics. And Stan, as I understand it, you're an economist. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right, good.
Yeah, unfortunately, I am one of the two own economists at this meeting. I found out yesterday.
Actually, there's another one.
You got to check your credentials first. Okay, yeah. No, but yes, that's yesterday Darren Hudson was over in the cotton thing. I happened to step in there, and he said he started off with saying that he was probably the only economist at the meeting. And I walked in, and he said, "Thanks, Stan, you made me a liar." But the other part, this session, if you ask me to talk about, while some don't think policy has a lot to do with the rotations, et cetera, I could have some good discussions on that. If you wanted me to talk about policy and how it affects Southern agriculture or the U.S. agriculture, I can get up and just start winging it and no problem within the time. But coming into it with this crop soils, and I'm not sure why they invited me, except I think outside the box, and I kind of present things differently. And I give the Georgia scientists a lot of fits. And especially when I started the National Center for Peanut Competitiveness, I really hit them about where they want to do this. And I said, where's the money for the farmer in the thing? I used to kid, I think the genomics started with the production side scientists, where that was maximize yields, not worrying about what it was going to cost. But the last piece before I get into my talk is that I had an old colleague of mine, many of you probably know him, Dr. Jerry Johnson, who is a retired wheat breeder at Georgia. When I thought he might be here, because I always heard him always come to these meetings, I thought, well, good, we can catch up a little bit. And he says, no, I'm not going to be there. I'm on a beach house right now, but at least now you moved up in the world. You can retire after this. This, looking at this stuff, you know, where's the cropping systems, and I enjoy the presentations. I like both yours and this front row bunch here, especially the Canadian one, where he did an excellent job about trying to put some economics in. I'm not used to seeing agronomists. Okay. So that's where it kind of surprised me, you know, where seeing that much, and I thought it was done very well. So at first I was going to have some reviews about what some of the issues, but then I thought, nah, there's not a lot of studies that really have economics in there that I consider economics. And that, and especially if you, the rotation and everything, the upper Midwest has done an excellent job. You have those long term where you're talking about that 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And here I'm looking at Scott here, where they're trying to get things going is what, seventh year or something like that. And then, to me, you got to have, because many of the studies I saw, they had 3 years of a rotation, but it took 3.5 years to do it, and they started publishing results. And to me, what I've observed is that you need to go through several cycles to really see what the effect. And hopefully, when I get out of time, I'll talk about some of the issues that I've seen down here where policy has impacted rotation in Southern agriculture significantly, and you're seeing it quite heavily. So I hope to be able to touch on that to give some examples of what's going on. So anyway, the second author, Carlos, is my research associate. I had him go through the literature and finding things so we can decide which way I'm going to go. And basically, talking to the choir here about they know about crop rotation and it's conservation agriculture, but the other is the need for sustainable agriculture systems. And the question is, what is a sustainable system? Many times when you listen to them talk about sustainable, they leave the word economics out there. They were going to just sustainable for the soil or the environment and not worrying about the other, that if the farmer can't stay on the farm and continue farming, then it's not sustainable. And as agriculture has moved to become more dependent upon chemical inputs, compared to where I grew up in Oklahoma on a wheat farm, wheat and beef cattle, once every few years we might have green bugs, and that was it. So we didn't, have a lot there. And we had the cattle that grazed the wheat, and of course they had the manure and stuff that kind of helped out. So you get that, some of the issues on it. And to me, it's broken down. They've got the environmental issues, which has been done very well here. and in your society and with publications. We're dealing with soil, the water resources, you know, the weeds, pests, etc. The other is the agriculture economy, and that's where you start getting into the economics of the system. And that's where the yield part's well documented. What I'm saying, we increase yield 2 bushels, 3 bushels, 5, or 2%, or 3%, or 5%. But it comes down to those, you know, what is, you know, the inputs being used? What's the prices for these, you know, when you start looking at some of these crops? And I hope to get into that about, you know, the pricing. We're sometimes concerned about when you take a, many of them I've had and I've seen where they say, well, we did this change and NAS says the price was this amount. Well, a farmer in that area of the state never could sell the crop in the first place. So those prices are not relevant, you know, and that's where I'll get into more about it in there. So on the economic impact, you can have yield increase, you can have, your inputs will get shifted around. I know that like in down in the south where you got nematodes, where the nematodes that affect cotton is not the same nematode that can affect peanuts. They're two different ones. So if you get that rotation, you can kind of keep some of that population down. I won't get into the issues about with the tillage part, whether it's talk about tillage stuff, but you know, it's found on some of the pests that go into the reduced tillage, minimum till, has increased its presence more in the soil. And that affects like on peanuts for sure, which a farmer from Malone can go from $355 down to $125 a ton. And that can basically bankrupt them on that approach. Then you got the out prices, and then you got sustainable firms that are going to be long term. And I think sustainability laws being driven by the manufacturer, so a lot of times it may not be very sustainable with the rotations, so that way they can show the environmentally with field to market studies and stuff where Walmart's and M&M, the Mars company, want to have those type things. The issue is going to come down is that are they willing to pay for that addition, you know, to ensure the sustainability, and that's where you're going to get the that's price. If they want the price, they want you to be sustainable, but the price of what your current system is that you use without making the changes, then it's not going to be sustainable. This is where I think, to me, and all this is the four key areas: market barriers, financial barriers, policies, and technical information. That you guys have done excellent jobs where you're doing the studies, but then the question is, like from Canada, about well, the farmers say, well, what about this? What about that? What about this? And I think that's where continue to do your studies and have that information, but then you got to take it. When you start putting the economics to it, just taking the market prices or what the USDA or what the, you know, Canadian government says are prices, you've got to look at what is the situation in your area to make sure is it potentially adaptable into their systems with the farms. The corn soybean thing is a little bit different because there is those established markets. But what I see in terms of market barriers now is like you had in there well, even new crops, you can look at old crops. Like you know, you showed one of them had the slides that showing how the soybean corn had changed from the early 1900s to 2010. The concentration is that when you look at all the areas, oats was big, wheat was big, and now all of a sudden they reduced in acres because of, you know, basic economics. And all of a sudden now, if they want to come back and you want to put oats back into your system, or even wheat, there's not a market out there for it in your area. So it's important to do the research to show that maybe there'll be enough out there that can finally generate that market development to bring the crop back in. So that's some things that need to be considered when you go through this process. And with new crops, is like on the nematodes, there was work being done in late 1990s, early 2000, where sesame was a crop that showed that could be, that would really reduce the level of nematodes in the soil significantly for both cotton and for peanuts. But the problem was there was no market for it. And so basically they took that whole year, that of that acre being used on that to help reduce it, but it did not do enough reduction with the lost revenue that you could not keep it going. And so that's where the issue about new crops. And I know in the southeast in Georgia where they came in with canola. Now canola has developed well in the Oklahoma area with the wheat canola rotation. But a lot of it's because they had so much that cheat in the wheat that the only way to control it is you had to use canola where you could use Roundup and you can get it controlled to deal with it. So that's where you got to look at, you know, in the southeast, it wasn't there, and also when the one firm pulled out, it left a bad taste in the farmer's mouth about the canola. So you also got the infrastructure. Can you get it harvested? Can you get it stored? It takes unique, because I take, like in Georgia, when I looked at back in the early years, there was a lot of corn, wheat, oats being grown, and there was a lot of those little storage bins around, and then got out of that for 20 years. Also, when prices came back in, the storage facilities weren't there. So if they grew it, there was such a discount on basis to get it to where you could store it, it made it where it was not. They look at that price when I was talking about where conversation beforehand about the corn being up a certain price, but they got nickel and dime down where it ended up being, you know, $4 or something like that. But that's where you got to worry about it. The financial barriers is another key one. When you agronomically, you can go show, yeah, when they need to bring this in, but then the equipment that might need to go into it that a farmer may not have. Especially you get in areas in Mississippi or South Carolina where peanuts are coming in, with it being a legume base. They say, well, yeah, you can grow that, and we do our budgets, and it looks great. You know, it helps reduce, you know, it has that nitrogen fixation, get all that. But then for a farmer to get into that business, it takes specialized equipment. You can't use it for any other enterprise. And so you're talking about maybe $500,000. Can they afford to do that? Because you need to have long-term to look at to determine whether you can or not. The other thing is the lenders. And this is a good case that basically if the lenders don't see a chance, most all farmers have to take a loan out for operating loan. If they don't see that they think they can get their loan repaid, they're not going to do it. And this is where policy comes in, that where the lenders basically saw in this last farm bill that the only enterprise they saw that a farmer could repay their loan was peanuts. So they would not give a farmer an operating loan to grow cotton, corn, or anything else that's important on the rotation. So your studies can show this is great to help, but the farmers don't have the capital to continue on, so they got to go to the banks. And if the banks are not willing to lend the money, it's not going to go anywhere. And then you get the federal policies. And while one of the speakers said didn't really see that a lot of impact, I think it has a significant amount of impact at what goes on outside the, you know, a narrow band area. And that's basically the level of safety net. And I'll go back to 1996 Farm Bill. They had the loans before corn and soybean out of kilter. And basically the soybean acres exploded. And the government ended up paying $1 billion to $2 billion a year for deficiency payments. Because the way the loan structure was for any farm, when I saw some of the budgets of my old friends, I got family up in Iowa, and you look at that budget, you'd be crazy not to grow soybeans. You're going to be able to cash flow better with soybeans than you could with corn, the way the loan structure was. And so in 2002 Farm Bill, they got that corrected to try to get it back in balance. So you get those type, you know, aspects of it, the policies will influence a little bit. And also the crop insurance. And that's why in the literature it wasn't until the 2014 Farm Bill that you had the whole farm revenue protection. So that way you could bring in some of these other crops that could help the rotation that would fit within. But before, when you put some of these other crops in there, there was no crop insurance to protect you against a deep loss. But they came in with 14 with the whole farm revenue to help offset that some. so we help balance out the whole rotation part, and that's important to have, that you need to think about. It should not influence what you're doing on your studies, and like you're pointing out, make sure you don't have the year effects. You need to go ahead and set that up and have long term, so you can see what is the agronomic effects, and then you take that information coupled with these other programs, either through the extension service, whatever, to determine whether or not a market can be developed out there, or it can be, you know, show the farmers that they can make it. Because basically, you take this year, and we have a set of 22 farms from Virginia to New Mexico on basic peanut representing farms, but those farms grow all the other crops too. They got corn, wheat, soybeans, grain sorghum. There's some soybeans in there too. And when I went through this summer updating about looking at what's going on with the reference price, with the policies, the market prices, which everybody's heard about how market prices are at all-time lows compared to what they were, and that U.S. net farm income's down 50% since 2013. When things are that tight, you don't have the luxury of trying new methods of production, alternative crops, etc. My old professor back in 1972 had done a study showing that government programs do provide stability because farmers are risk adverse. And with that stability, they're willing to more adopt new technologies, new methods, new crops, whatever, experiment with it because they know they still got that safety net. And as more of that's moved away, you have a problem. And that was a bit when we were talking about, you know, in 2008, that started out of my center. In 2002, I brought up, but that was a big issue during the Farm Bill with some big changes. They didn't want to get into another new idea. But when Senator Conrad of the Dakotas was still around back then, in the early 2000s, you were having that barley problems with the disease. And that's in 2002. He thought that showed where if you plant certain legumes, you can help minimize some of those diseases on your barley. And so in 2002, he put into the Farm Bill a marketing loan for those legume crops. But it didn't quite work as well. And that's when if I point out to them about this concept of what's called the Resource Conserving Crop Rotation Program, which is supplemental payments for environmental payments for, you know, where you introduce some resource conserving crop rotation. Because I saw with that going on, they planted the seed up there in D.C. and they went to Conrad to point out how that could also help. He signed on, so you had the Republicans and Democrats both signing on to it. That basically I knew with environmental aspects getting higher in voice out there in D.C., that with cotton and peanuts being some of the highest active ingredients per acre of the crops around, that if you can put a resource conserving crop in there, improve the rotation, 5 minutes, okay, that you would then be able to be supplemental payments that would help encourage them to go do it. And so that went in the 2008 Farm Bill. However, it didn't totally work out. When you got bureaucrats up there, they got their own ideas what should be, and they kind of changed it around where it's not as used as it could have been. The other is the technical information. That's where, you know, getting the information out to the farmers, and that's where I've seen where a lot of the congressmen and senators have been very upset with NRCS about not getting enough, there's not enough technical guidance out there after all the hard work you guys do. So basically, you know, it's the profit and the bottom line these guys are going to look at with these policies, those four key areas, to determine whether or not they're going to adopt it. And that's the key. All the hard work you do on the research, you like to see some of it being adopted because it can help on the environmental side. But it still comes down to, like the farmers that we interviewed, I was working out what the prices were, and I said, guys, before you put the tractor in the field and plant on cotton, corn, or some of the others, you're losing $300 to $500 an acre. Automatically, you're going to lose that much. Why are you doing it? And they said, because we want to farm. But the other part was, as I dug into it more, is that the vegetable industry is coming big in the Southeast. And that's where they said they're using those good years of the vegetable production to offset the loss that they like to do on the row crop side. So it, and the others may have livestock, and the livestock sector is good right now, so they're using that, Peter, to pay Paul. So they can still keep doing their, what they really love to do, is to do the planting and the row crops. So basically, that's kind of, it's a different twist. Hope I didn't embarrass some of my colleagues from Georgia too much about looking at how these things, you need to be looking at it. And this was a test, Scott, to see if anybody knew what kind of crop this is out there. Does anybody know? And only if you can answer that, I'll answer your you can answer your question. Yes.
So we're in the dinner phase, and this is the struggle that I have in the extension of agronomy too. Joel's data and others clearly show that patience works. But as you pointed out, most farms are risk averse, and ever since we went away from base acreage, its rotations have become a year to year decision. Their markets drive decisions on what gets planted as much as anything else.
And I think
So that's the rub, if you think about it, at least in my area, and why corn and beans are winning out over wheat. The crop insurance has to do with, you know, everything else. Is there a methodology on the econ side, like Monte Carlo simulation, where you take all those inputs from year to year with and combine that with what Joe Lauer's data shows in the rotational effect, where we can make what I call the opportunity cost of a rotation to demonstrate that rotations on a time horizon, both short time horizon and long term horizon,
right,
it makes sense. Because I cannot communicate that there's opportunity cost that we're missing out. It's the increased cost for herbicides, all those other things, all the plus that you talked about. Because I keep beating my head against the wall, because I know the rotational data.
This is going to be a knock on my profession that I've seen over the years, and I guess when you get older, you start looking back and you think, you know, where's your heads at, guys? Back when I was a student in the early years, there used to be, in our profession, a lot of folks, farm management experts, production economists. And that's where they use these models called linear programming, quadratic programming type thing. And I did some of that back in the late 90s before I'd gotten this resource conserving concept, was with that sesame and everything. I had a guy that knew how to do those models where you had multiple years. So it's not a 1 year profit maximization. You had to look at it over 3, 5, 7, 10 year. And what would it take? What does it take to get that income stream comparable to the other? And if it meant having to do like a government program like that, or that resource conserving, that would tack in there. Our profession does not seem to be training any folks in that area anymore.
I don't disagree,
but the problem is our profession, it's not the glamorous thing to get promoted and tenure now, and so they're moved off to, you don't see anybody coming out that has those skills of that type of modeling that was done back 20, 30 years ago.
Because I can bark up this tree for the rest of my career, and right now the correlation between my presence in Minnesota and the decline of small grain acres is about a perfect correlation.
colleague that was my mentor, when he came to Georgia, they had so many dairy farms, and when he retired, there was basically none left, you know.
I do want to highlight, though, Bill's got a great spreadsheet on some of this. But you don't do Monte Carlo. It's just a,
yeah.
It's just
a because Monte Carlo, too, what I understand with Monte Carlo is that it's a year-to-year.
It's a stochastic. You got to introduce stochasticness into it with prices. And
that mimics the risk.
So they can see what a 5 year, 7 year, because the extension budget is like this period. And of course, I could go down the road about the extension budgets. I know in the South don't even match up close to what the reality is. Because when I go out there and I do my 20 some farms, I got the peanut stuff, and it's five nationally $5.52. My corn is $6. Cotton is over $1 a pound. And none of the market price close to there. And so, what in the heck are you growing any of this? Well, you're farming away your equity. But the extension doesn't get in. I'm not sure why.
Well, part of it is indeed because